You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then. You're very welcome along to Talking Rugby. This is episode 14, where we review the first round of the Heineken Cup action and look forward to this weekend's games. We discuss the youngsters around the provinces and also the Irish connection overseas, Irish players that may play for Ireland in the future. We also give our two cents on the departure of Martin Johnson from England and possible candidates for the job. Zach Guilford has been in the news for all the wrong reasons, and we'll be discussing what should be done with him. I'm delighted to be joined once again by Alan from Limerick, who's still recovering from the euphoria of Miracle Match Mark 2 at Thomond Park. Alan, welcome to the show.
Yeah, Dave, I'm still recovering, and I'd just like to thank Tig, and particularly Tig, for his kind words about me last week. It was very heartfelt.
Yeah, we sure did have a good time. Tig, you're welcome back to the show, all the way from Kerry.
How's it going, Dave?
Not too bad. And Peter, Peter, back from Canada, we're delighted to have you again on the show.
Good to be here, Dave.
And for the first time making his debut on Talking Rugby is, of course, William. And William, you're from a little seaside town called Whitehead, outside of Antrim, it's in Antrim, but no doubt if it's a nice seaside town, they've got to do good fish and chips down there, or up there, I should say.
Yes, they do. The fish comes from Killybegs, so it's good stuff.
All right, okay, fair enough. We'll take that. And a quick one, Tig, you have a little funny story. You met a Nigerian man in Limerick wearing a Munster jersey. Do I want to know where this is leading?
I was just up in a little cafe there in Limerick City, and I was up paying for my coffee and my little bit of food, and I saw this Nigerian man wearing a Munster jersey, and I said, you're a fan of Munster. He said, yes, I'm a big fan of Munster rugby. I said, oh, fair play. She was like, yes, I'm looking forward to the Heineken Cup this weekend. Big fan of Brian O'Driscoll, play for Munster rugby. And I had to inform him, of course, Brian O'Driscoll is a Leinster player. He's not a Munster player. He's like, no, Brian O'Driscoll, play for Munster rugby, Heineken Cup, woohoo. It's a bit awkward there for me.
Are you sure he wasn't just yanking your chain, busting your chops, stirring the pot, mixing your stew?
It's a lot of vocabulary there, Dave. But,
are you sure?
No, I'd say he was full sure that Brian O'Driscoll was a Munster fan. So I had to let him down there, in fairness.
Wow, indeed. Janie, that's pretty crazy. Brian O'Driscoll playing for Munster. That's a new one, I have to say. But sure, we'll keep those stories in an old archive. Lads, I want to get down to business, and let's look at the Heineken Cup and Munster's 33-21 win over Northampton Saints. Alan, I'm going to give the honour of looking at this match to you. Another miracle match for the men in red.
Yes, it was unbelievable. And I was lucky enough to be there, and it was just spellbinding and gripping from beginning to end. I mean, you emotionally invest in a team for nights like that. It was just amazing, amazing stuff. You know, the momentum kept going back and forth from both sides, and for a lot of the game, you really weren't sure how it was going to go. And I think Munster, they showed great character to hang in there when they were under a lot of pressure, and Dougie's try just before half time, I think, was absolutely vital, because that was a time in the game when we were really struggling, and when we had the opportunity to score, we took it, and Howlett was absolutely sensational. I think everyone is singing the praises of Peter Romani and O'Gara, and rightly so. They were absolutely brilliant, but I think Dougie was an absolute hero. Yeah. And it's great to see a guy that he's still producing the goods for us. And he's been, you know, Dougie's been here a long time. I think it must be his fifth season out at Munster. And he was a sensational player on Saturday. And I suppose onwards and upwards from here.
And the try, Peter, came at the right time for Munster. It was a real boost for the team, and I guess the confidence that they're going to take out of this game, and particularly their performance. I mean, it wasn't a bad Northampton display either, you know, and they could have, you know, easily won the game.
Northampton, they will be kicking themselves that they didn't finish Munster off. But one thing we have learned about Munster is if you don't finish Munster off and you have them on the ropes, there is no better team to actually, with 10 minutes left, to get themselves into position to win the game. And it's exactly what happened. Munster, it wasn't a vintage Munster performance, you know, for the majority of the game. They were on the ropes. But by God, when they were called upon, they really pulled out some of that Munster magic. And it was a fantastic finish. I mean, when you hear the RTE commentary, it just embraces how everybody felt about that.
Yeah.
It just felt like destiny. You knew it was going to happen. There's no way that ball was going to be fumbled and Munster were not going to actually take the game. You just knew it in your heart and soul that was going back to Rog and they were going to get the drop goal. It was fantastic.
Yeah, we've got a text here from Ursula in Galway. A bit of critical of Alan. And in fairness, I think it's a bit harsh because Alan is a true Munster fan. It says, Alan, did you steal both my pairs of red high heels? And do you think Ronan O'Gara's super show is merely papering over the many cracks of a very average performance? I want to bring that one to Tig, actually. And Tig, looking at Northampton, they don't seem to have much luck with Irish provinces.
Well, you're going on the final last year, but
yeah.
I expected Northampton to blow Munster away in the second half, to be honest with you. I thought this current Munster team wouldn't have had it in them compared to previous Munster teams to pull out a huge performance to overturn them. But, I mean, when that final whistle went, I mean, I'm a big hairy beast of a man, as Alan will tell you, but I was in tears. I was shaking. It was magnificent. 41 phases to get that drop goal in the end was just, oh, it was the stuff that Munster folklore is made of.
Yeah, the stuff of dreams. You can't write that stuff. William, I suppose there was performances from Munster debutants, you know, the likes of O'Mahony, Murray and Barnes. They would have done themselves a lot of favours coming in. And, you know, how do you think they did?
I thought that they all played really well. I'm a bit reticent to heap in even more praise on Murray. I don't think his performance was perfect, but he's a long way to go and he's only a young guy. O'Mahony, superb. Maybe lacks a bit of pace to be really right up there and so on. And Barnes, I think, is a guy with a good future because he's got everything that you need. The one thing that worried me before the game was the battle between Tongawea and Botha, because last year when Botha was probably against him in the quarterfinal, he got absolutely minced, and the same thing happened again. Now, I know scrummaging isn't always just about the props, but I did, using the slow motion on the recording that I have, I had a really good look at what Tongawea does, and the scrummaging isn't always anywhere near legal.
All right, yeah.
He has certain tricks, and another trick that Northampton do is that they get a little bit of go forward, and the hooker just stands up, and that pulls the opposing hooker up, and therefore they get even more go forward ball. So quite often the opposition gets penalised because it's usually the advancing scrum that wins the penalty, and it's a trick that they seem to have perfected pretty much. But the young guys, absolutely fabulous. It did look, I think it was Tig or Peter who said, it looked as if they were going to lose the game, and I thought exactly the same. But they pulled it out at the end, and that's what Munster do. Fabulous.
A point on that, William, and obviously, you know, you're a good man for embracing technology and actually getting to the bones of the argument and actually looking closely at the scrummaging and that. But you mentioned about Murray, and a lot of people are saying, you know, he had played a high standard of international rugby, well, the highest you can play at a World Cup, but he had never played really a Heineken Cup game up to that. What do you think is the difference in the standards of play? Do you think he was able to adapt what he had at international? Do you think it's harder coming in to a Heineken Cup game from playing international, or do you think that should put you well able for it? I know he's a young man as well.
I would suggest that perhaps nerves had a lot to do with it, playing in front of his home crowd. One of the most important games he'll ever play in, without the comfort of a squad of 30-odd people there, you know, it's just difficult. I'm not being critical of them. Don't get me wrong, but I think that there's a big step up between AIL or
yeah.
Rabo Direct Rugby and Heineken Cup and International Rugby, and he's done very well. I don't think people should get carried away by his performances just yet. That's
yeah.
my point. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one to see. Alan, I want to bring you in on this, and I want to give you kind of the final word on this game. Firstly, obviously you want to you're paying homage to O'Gara, but also, just a quick word on Hayes, 100 European rugby caps. Is he what you'd call a legend?
Yes, he is a legend. He is just, it's funny actually because when he came on, there was very little reaction because we were all terrified we were going to lose the game. So almost when Hayes came on, it was almost a periphery thing. I remember I watched it on the highlights on TG Carr, and it sounded like there was a good applause, but from where I was sitting, there really wasn't. But look, forget about it. Now, I suppose after winning the game, we can really appreciate it. And I think Ronan O'Gara summed it up in his post-match press conference when he said, you know, that Hayes was the right guy to reach the milestone first, and that he's a legend. Like, that's exactly what he said. And Hayes, just a humble guy, just said, well, you know, there's a few of the lads who've been around a while, and there'll be a few of the lads, you know, reaching the milestone as well, and, you know, I'm proud to win it. But, you know, just such a humble character. He was absolutely brilliant. I mean, he was very, very good when he came on. He played a very key part in the 41 phases, you know, made a few carries, and what more can you say about the guy? Absolute legend of Munster Rugby.
Okay, Alan, okay, before this loves fest gets a little out of control, Peter, would you echo those words from Alan? He seemed to light up the whole stadium. They love him down there. Would you be shouting in praises like Alan is?
For Hayes?
Sure.
Well, we've spoke about Hayes before and all he's done for Ireland and Munster. Yeah, he's great, you know, with what he's done. But at this point in time, I think it's just pure luck that he was brought on and that Munster actually won the game. I don't think Hayes has much to offer anymore. And frankly, I'd rather see a younger guy there get a go. But yeah, I suppose they love him down in Munster, but I suppose they don't have much to shout about down there, so they might as well cherish him.
I was waiting.
Draw against Montpellier.
Yeah.
Montpellier.
I was waiting for something like that to happen, but I suppose it takes a John Hayes glory moment from Alan to bring about that. I want to move on to the match. Obviously, Munster are away now to Castro Olympique. Castro's failure, I guess, lads, to get a point away to Scarlets will affect the pool. Tig, what do you think about this one? It's kind of turned the table, not upside down, but it's given it a bit of a shake and a bit of a rattle. You know, like those cups where you throw a few dices into and you shake them when you're playing snakes and ladders or stuff. Do you think Munster are going to bring this momentum into their away games?
Well, I'm not sure how Castro are going to react to their last Heineken Cup game, because French teams, of course, the cliche is that, you know, French teams don't care about the Heineken Cup, they only care about their domestic league. But I mean, they're doing very well in the top 14 at the moment, so I would have expected them to blitz this pool, to be honest. I didn't have much confidence in Munster going into the Heineken Cup, and I was kind of surprised at the result of their game. So I don't know. I mean Ronan O'Gara's drop goal at the end of the Munster game kind of papered over the cracks, so to speak, of their performance. So I don't know. I wouldn't expect a Munster win against Castro, to be honest, home or away.
Yeah, that seems like a bit of a sharp sword there, yet you're grinding. William, do you fancy Castro to roll over Munster in this game? Sure, you know, Munster might be a bit tired, or do you think?
I would expect Munster to come away with a bonus point win. I just have the feeling that after that get out of jail card on Saturday, that they'll go there and do what they've done to Perpignan and so on in the past and come away with 5 points. I'd be really disappointed if they don't. They're going to have to reinvent themselves. We didn't have Doc on the on the field for the first time in 10 years.
Yeah,
as a choice when he's fit. I don't know that I agree with that, but I just think that they have the firepower when they get it right in the forwards, providing they pick their back row. I was very impressed with Leamy when he came on. Wouldn't be, have been a big fan of his recently, but he came on and he offered a physicality in that last 40 phases that was just missing all through the game, I think, in the back row. His power, determination, and that's what Munster rugby has been characterised by over the last 12 years.
It sure
and
has,
he
yeah.
showed it, you know. So I would fully expect them to stuff Castra.
Yeah.
And I really hope they do.
Okay, well, that's amazing confidence there, William. It has to be said. Alan, if we're talking about stuffing Castra, who do you think will start for Munster, or who should start for Munster? Would you go along with William there? No doubt he'd want kind of to see Leamy again. Do you think Leamy will start?
Well, personally, I'd like to see Leamy start at six and move Peter O'Mahony to seven, because Niall Ronan, he's just... In fairness to the guy, he's very, very busy on the pitch. I mean, he's involved so much. If you watch him, he was everywhere. But he just mixes the bad with the bad, really. And I'd worry going out of France for a cast of a massive, massive pack. They have a very good back row with the likes of Diarra and Massoi. So I'd say, yeah, Leamy at six, O'Mahony at seven, with Colin at eight. On the game itself, I think the issue with the game being in Toulouse is a big, big plus for Munster. The Cast fans are apparently boycotting the game because they're not happy that that is being played in Toulouse and not in Cast. Cast
yeah.
is about 70 kilometres away from Toulouse, about an hour and a half drive. The club now, in fairness, they've laid on cheap buses, but the Cast fans just wanted the game in their home ground. I just, as an example, I remember last year when Munster went to Toulon, and I was actually at that game. I mean, Toulon could have easily moved that game to the Stade Vélodrome in Marseille and
yeah.
got 50,000 at there, but they chose to keep it at home to create, you know, the fiercest atmosphere possible, and I think that's what Cass should have done. So it mightn't be the typical French kind of violent violence a bit harsh, but a very passionate atmosphere
yeah.
that we're used to over there. And that can only benefit Munster. And, you know, I'm not sure how Cast are going to approach it. Obviously, they lost away to Scarlets last week, and they didn't even get a bonus point. And Scarlets away would have been the easiest of the away fixtures. So now, to get out of the pool, they're going to have to win in Franklin's Gardens and or at Thomond. And I can't see them doing that. So, I don't know, will they take it seriously? If they don't, Munster will beat them handily. If they do take it seriously, it'll be very, very difficult. But I think if it's going to be a bit of a strange, quiet atmosphere, that'll benefit Munster hugely, and they should win.
Okay, Peter, would you go along with that? What do you think about this one?
I think that the moving of the fixture will work in Munster's favour, but I honestly think that the result of the weekend did paper over an awful lot of cracks, because Northampton definitely should have beaten Munster, and they would be very disappointed. For me, I just don't think... I think you can't really write Cass off. They're a very good side. Their league form is very good, and I don't think they will be lying down second game into the tournament. If they'd lost two and they were going into their third game, then maybe. But I'd be very surprised if Munster get a win, and they'll be lucky if they can get a losing bonus point. I think I just wouldn't have that much confidence in Munster away at the moment.
And your quick prediction on that one, Peter.
I would go Cast to win it and Munster to sneak the losing bonus point.
Oh, would you go along with that, William?
No, I would be quite confident. I think that Cast were beaten by possibly one of the worst sides. Good rugby playing side, but not a strong contender for the cup. They now realise that it's all up with them. They're not going to beat the Saints home and away, and they're not going to beat Munster, certainly at Thomond. So I think they'll just put their hands up in the air and roll over and have their tummies tickled.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do in the Heineken Cup when the game's up, and it is up for them.
Okay.
I think they needed to win away in Clonmacnoise in order to have any chance, and they haven't got a point. I don't think they've a hope in hell, so I think they'll just move on.
Yeah, what about you, Tig? What do you reckon?
I would be happy with a losing bonus, but even at that, I think it'll be a stretch for Munster, to be honest.
That's but Alan, would you go along with your fellow Munster man, or would you take the Ulster point of view that Munster are going to really win this one?
Well, I suppose it depends on two things. Have Munster revived, or are they papering over the cracks? And
okay.
Will Cass turn up? So my prediction is Neil Francis will win.
Yeah, well, we'll have to talk that one out on one of the shows. Anyway, yeah, I want to look at the other pools, lads, and look at Leinster's pools. Leinster obviously going into this, you know, without Brian O'Driscoll. Who should really play for Leinster? We've seen, you know, they got the, they got there in the end, I suppose, in their first Heineken Cup. It's always going to be harder tyke going in as Heineken Cup champions to these games.
Well, I mean, they're without their talisman and at 13, and apparently McFadden's out at 13 now as well. So they have a bit of an injury crisis in the centre, and a lot of their attacking play goes through the centre from Sexton. So I don't know. I would expect them to get out of their group, of course, and I would expect them to make headway in the playoff situation. But I don't really know, to be honest.
Yeah, Peter, you're a big Leinster fan. What about the scrum half position? Who would you go for in that one? Would it be Boss or Redden? I mean, a lot of people, I suppose, have said that Isaac Boss would be better in there for the style of rugby that he's playing than Redden. And then I guess they suit different matches almost, don't they?
Well, I think Schmidt has been very good because he utilises the two players. They both offer you very different things. Boss is pretty much like he's like a scrum marshal. It's like having a fourth back row player. He's so big and physical. And with Redden, you get that quicker snappiness of release the ball, so he's better on go forward ball. And I find that Schmidt utilises them very well. If we're coming up against someone tough and physical, it'll be a case of Boss starts and then Redden will come on. Whereas if it's a case of it's a team who we're going to go out and try and take on and play rugby against, Redden will start. And then Boss will probably get the last 20 minutes or so. So definitely, I don't think it's a case of who should start. I think it's a case of horses for courses with the two of them. That's my opinion of it. And I think that's how Schmidt sees it.
Okay, well, yeah, enough there. That's a fair enough point. William, what do you think about that one? You're happy with the scrum halves, but actually, I wanna just bring to you about McLaughlin. William, what do you think about him, and where would you play him?
Yeah, well, he's one of those guys that falls between two stools. I think he's a pretty good six. I don't think he's a very good second row. I don't think in the modern game he's tall enough or physical enough at the moment. He might fill out. I just don't think he offers that. He's a good player, deserves his place on the bench, I think. But if you're talking about a six, I would have O'Brien at six. I just think he's the guy at six. When they play him at seven, I would have Jennings at seven, quite handily. And Hayslip, obviously, at eight. I would have McLaughlin on the bench to cover second row, back row, if that's need be. But you know, with regard to the scrum half issue, either of the players would be fine. As Peter said, both of them are good players. They offer different things. I'm a big fan of Isaac Boss because he played up here for a long time and played well when the team were playing like drains and held them together at times and scored vital tries and won games. And I was really disappointed when he left. But he's a great player. Yeah. He gets an awful lot. He's not fabulous, but he's great. You know, he's a star player. He's worthy of his place in the team.
Okay, we just have a text for Peter from Chuck in Toronto. Peter, I don't know what friends you have listed to this show, but there's someone, Chuck, I don't know if you know this guy. He says, Pete, unfortunately, your application for the position of fuel injection technician was unsuccessful, but do you think Sexton plays better for Leinster than he does for Ireland? Peter, what do you think?
Sexton, yeah. I think Sexton plays better for Leinster, pretty much because of familiarity, and it's the same with O'Gara and any other out half. They play better normally for their club sides or provincial sides in their country, because obviously with the guys they're playing around them, they're more familiar. Sexton hasn't been playing bad for Ireland. It's just in the World Cup his kicking was absolutely dire. I think even Alan could probably have had a better kicking percentage than Sexton at the World Cup.
Hey, that's unfair.
But But I he has shown, especially with that final kick against Montpellier, that was a pressure kick to draw the game, and it was a great kick. So that's something that Ronan would be even delighted with and hailed as a hero. So I think our Johnny deserves the same sort of credit.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. And Tig, before we move on, just a quick one on Glasgow's win. We gave Glasgow so much stick over the past few weeks on the show, you know, that they're journeymen, you're not going to get too much about them. How do you think this is going to affect the pool?
Surprising win, to be honest, against Bath. Bath have been going well, but it was that last-minute try by Richard Gray that I remember Alan going on about. How will it affect the pool? I'm not sure. I think Glasgow Warriors, it's just another lucky win for them. And Bath deserved that game.
It was an unbelievable try. For anyone that saw it, I think it almost put Rodgers drop goal. It almost made Rodgers drop goal seem a bit boring, to be honest. It was just crazy. And it had to be Richie Gray to do it. You know, Richie Gray and 14 Donkeys of Glasgow.
Oh dear, oh dear.
Doing it again. Always Richie Gray. And how it affects the pool, well, I suppose it's a great result for Leinster, because now I think Bath would have been outside, you know, the second favourites for the pool, and now having lost that, they're going to have to go to the Aviva, I think, in December and win, and that is that's a big ask. So I think if Leinster can beat Glasgow next week and deny him a bonus point, I think they basically have the pool won.
Okay, well, it will be an interesting one to see, particularly if they do somehow go to the Aviva and nick a win. It'll put you all to shame and you'll all be eating humble pie. But let's move on and let's look at Ulster's pool. William, would you assess the performance of Ulster so far? It was probably, a lot of people are describing it as a scrappy win, but was it hard fought and was it deserved? What do you think?
It was a physically brutal match against a very strong and very committed French side who came here just to shut us down and to stuff us. And they did that pretty much for the first 30, 35 minutes. It seemed to work on there very well for them. But Ulster hung in there, and the forward pack to a man were superb. We stuffed them in the scrums. We won 3-4 penalties in the scrums, which is amazing for an Ulster scrummage. Chris Henry, who would have been my man of the match, was just absolutely superb. The only thing I would say is that if they had three different goal kickers, and as mentioned earlier, Alan would be a better goal kicker than these three guys. And now Morgan Parra, I mean, we saw him, he's a fabulous kicker. You know, poor Brock James come on again, and you know, he'd be better tying his boots together. When he kicks, he'd be more accurate.
And what do you think about the performance of the Ulster back row in the game?
I thought they were great, because it was one of those days where you just needed people to strangle the life out of the opposition, and that's exactly what they did. Henry was just fabulous, I have to say. He's the best game he's ever played for Ulster. I'd be a reasonably good fan of him. He's one of those guys, he's never going to play for Ireland again. But he was superb. Ferris you remember the bet against Australia where he lifted Will Genny up and carried, he did exactly the same to Morgan Parra. He was absolutely raging when he left. You could see his face, he was furious. You know, the try that was scored at the end was fabulous. It was a really great try, you know. We deserved to win, but I wouldn't get carried away. If they had brought their kickers, we'd have lost.
Okay, would you go along with that one, Alan? If they brought their kickers, Ulster would have lost. But as you said, there was a little bit of vintage Ulster in that performance.
I didn't see the game. But I just want to ask William, because I think it's a big issue. We'll talk about it later when we're talking about the young players. Paddy Wallace started this game at 12.
Yeah, and it was very good.
Yeah, but do you think Spence should be picked ahead of him? Because I think Spence is a potential international, maybe not this year, but I think in the future. And I think Spence needs to play in these games.
I agree entirely. I would pick Spence at 12 or 13 if Cave was injured. I'd have no qualms about it whatsoever. He's a fabulous player. I would be quite happy to see him playing in the Six Nations come February. He's got so much talent, it's amazing.
So who would be your first choice 13? Is Cave definitely...
Cave is one of those guys. He makes the game look so easy. And quite often, if you see a player making a game look easy, you think he's not very good. But in fact, it's the exact opposite. He's a wonderful player.
Now,
he does lack a few things. He doesn't have the pace of Griffin, for example.
Yeah, of course.
But he's quicker than you think. If you, last year, when they were playing Connacht, he actually, from behind, caught Fionn Carr and brought him down. And Fionn Carr had considerable 4 or 5 meter start on him. So how slow is that?
Just one thing I wanted to say, again, sorry, Dave, that Ulster obviously did a great season last season, but getting to the Heineken quarterfinal for the first time in 10, 11 seasons, or since they won the competition back in 99.
Right,
And they obviously got to the Magnus semi-final where I suppose they had so many injuries that they never really had a chance against Leinster. But do you think that Ulster, they're having second season yips, the sort of second season syndrome? Because any time I've seen them now, it's at Pro 12 level without the internationals there, but they don't seem to have kicked on from last season at all. And maybe do you think that McLaughlin, is he the guy to take them forward?
Well, it started off well because the first game of the season was against Harlequins, and with all our 9 players missing at the World Cup, we stuffed them completely, and that was the Harlequins' first team that are sitting on top of the Aviva Premiership. Mm. So I think when you have 9 players plus 3 or 4 major players out injured, the team looked as if they'd never met each other before, and that was because they hadn't. But second season syndrome, they do look a bit undercoached or uncoached or badly coached. We have no forwards coach, we have no scrum coach, we have no defence coach. In the professional era, I think that's unforgivable, personally.
Well, you see, you're getting that actually from, I suppose, William, there's a lot of Ulster fans that probably share your view, and we've been running a little poll, we've been counting the texts coming into the show, and a lot of people are 50-50 on the whole Spence or Wallace at 12. But I just want to put a final point to you, William, on the Ulster, looking ahead, I guess, to Leicester v Ulster. This game, do you think Ulster can go away now and get a result? They seem to be a lot better at Ravenhill, but I guess, you know, it's going to be, they'll probably try to almost slow the game down, almost going into this one.
I don't think so. I think if they do that, they'll just play into the Tigers' hands. They have to go out and play a high-tempo game. The Ulster backs will be better than the starting backs for Leicester. At the moment, they're kind of running on their reserves, from what I gather from the Tigers fans that I talked to. The big problem we have will be in the front row. We're going to have to play Declan Fitzpatrick at tight head. And I just think we'll get stuffed. I think he'll get yellow carded, or Court will get yellow carded. We'll suffer a range of penalties, and the team will not thrive in those circumstances. Dickie Fitzpatrick is an okay player at league level. I think when he comes up against Ayerza or who knows, Castro Giovanni or whoever, he will just get his head shoved up his fundament.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's a terrible thing that it might come down to something as simple as that.
Yeah, possibly. And just finally there, William, do you miss Niall O'Connor?
Not at all.
No.
No. No, I have to be very careful.
But he's a Munster legend, William.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. Yeah, he's a really good, for a rugby player, he's a very good golfer. I had an interesting statistic. There was one series where Niall had played 41 times for Ulster as the 10, and in those 41 games, Ulster had won 3.
I love it. You'll only hear it here on Talking Rugby. Yeah. Lads, I want to move on to Pool 6 and Connacht's pool and Peter. What do you think about Connacht this year? They're in the Heineken Cup. I mean, I guess, you know, a lot of people are talking about the performance of McSherry and Griffin. It's a pretty strong Connacht front row as well. What do you reckon?
Yeah, Connacht, they pulled it out of the bag. I didn't expect them to actually give it that form sort of performance. But I suppose they're on a hiding to nothing in this year's Heineken Cup. They'll go out and give it their all, and we probably will see Connacht, you know, given a good performance and, you know, acquitting themselves well. But ultimately, it's going to be very hard to see them actually get any results. I think a lot of teams will probably might look at Ulster, Connacht, and take it easy on them. And that could be their only chance. But I think, yeah, it's great they got close and they deserve to get the bonus point. They were unfortunate that they didn't get it, but I wouldn't be too excited about their chances just based on that performance.
Can they up it now going into the clash with Toulouse? I mean, Toulouse are the one they really wanted, you know, the fireworks of their Heineken Cup, you know, the World Cup for the Connacht fans. It's going to be special for them.
Yeah, I'm actually going up to the game and I'm really looking forward to it. It should be a belter. I think it's such a great moment for Connacht, and I suppose I'm jumping on the bandwagon here, hopping on the bandwagon when Connacht are going places where there's been a lot of fans there, maybe about 2,000, 3,000 hardcore fans that have suffered through thick and thin, and finally they're getting their day out in the sun that they deserve.
Yeah.
Connacht, it's going to be very tough. I mean, Toulouse, they struggled against Gloucester last week. Gloucester played very well, and Gloucester deserved to get a losing bonus point. But Toulouse rested a heap of players. I think Clerc, Maidar wasn't playing. Doucetoir, of course, wasn't playing. Servat was on the bench. So they have a lot of players to come back in if they choose to bring them back in.
Okay.
And if they do, Connacht, it's going to be a very tough game. But I suppose it was Connacht's performance last week, a lot of positives in it, I think, particularly the youngsters again, we'll talk about them a bit later. McSharry, Griffin, O'Halloran, very, very good. Duffy at fullback is a stalwart, and he's a very calming influence. He scored a very good try off Toohey's pass. So I think Connacht will be lucky. If Toulouse name their frontline team, I think Connacht will be lucky to get within 10 points, but they'll have a great atmosphere in Galway. There'll be a good 7,500 pouring them on, and let's hope for a good day out and Connacht can produce the goods.
Yeah, and as they say, they'll have the day in their sun. And just a final point on Connacht, without jumping too deep into the deep pool of the old angry conversation that every single Connacht fan seems to have, do you think they've been unfairly treated?
In the match or in general?
No, I just mean in general, the whole IRFU thing.
Oh, over the last few years, yeah, it's pretty easy to say they've been treated unfairly by the IRFU, by referees, by everyone who comes to the sports ground there. They're always criticised for their lack of cohesion and their lack of teamwork, but I think in the last two seasons to this season, they've really shown that, you know, they might not have the superstars of the other Irish provinces, but they can definitely turn up and they can definitely cause a few upsets in their time. And I think they'll cause some more upsets in this pool in the Heineken Cup for sure.
Are they becoming a Leinster substitute academy? That's a bit harsh, I know. I apologise to Connacht fans listening, but it's what a lot of people seem to be thinking.
To be honest with you, I wouldn't be too averse to them being a Leinster sub-academy, because I know we'll talk about this later on, but the amount of talent coming through in Leinster at the moment, and Ulster indeed, is such that, you know, Connacht not being expected to do great things at the top level, it's a great place for young players to go and exercise their trade in at the highest level, especially when they're in the Heineken Cup.
Okay, well, we wish Connacht the very best of luck, and hopefully it'll be a beautiful day and hopefully a win, which if Alan has his way, they probably wouldn't if Toulouse turn up with their players. Lads, a quick point on the other pools. Pool 2, Edinburgh won away to London Irish and Connacht won away to Racing Metro. I guess, Peter, the Edinburgh result is a bit of a surprise.
It is, yeah, but I suppose Edinburgh are kind of, they're one of those teams in the Heineken Cup that if you have an off day or if you're not up for it, they're just one of those annoying teams that will end up beating you or frustrating you to the point where you don't get a bonus try against them.
Oh, this is the usual stuff, this anti-Scottish mentality that we get from you, Peter, in fairness.
It's not anti-Scottish. It's just, it's Edinburgh. Like, everybody knows that the majority of teams, if you play well and on your day, you will beat them. But the problem is they drag you into just playing a horrible game. And, you know, to be honest, they're not an entertaining team to watch. And I didn't even watch the game.
Okay. William, would you be entertained by that Edinburgh win?
Yes, because, although what Peter says, some parts of what he says have merit. Edinburgh also has some really good players, and players who you can certainly, for example, Tim Visser, who you can certainly score tries. I believe his young brother has now joined the Edinburgh side as well. I don't know whether how good or bad he is. I think that I've been to Edinburgh for some of the league games.
Yeah.
And playing in that monstrous bowl of a stadium with 3,000 people in it is just awful. They'd be far better moving out and going and playing a soccer ground nearby.
The problem there is SRU own Murrayfield, Edinburgh Rugby, who probably have little to no money, given that Edinburgh and Glasgow are pretty much selling clubs. I mean, we've seen Richie Gray going to Sale of all places, but I think it's really down to money that they're staying in Edinburgh, staying in Murrayfield.
Yes, but it's tragic. It really is absolutely tragic.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think what they did a smart thing last time. I think they put all the fans on the side of the stadium where the cameras will actually see them. As before, you know, with the few times I've been there and come home and watch the highlights on TV, you're looking at this empty stadium because everybody's on the same side as the main camera shots, you know. So at least it looks a bit better.
They set it up, but yeah, as you said, I think a lot of people will agree with you there, William. You know, this business of playing, you know, these matches in a big ground when you only have about 3,000 there, it's never going to generate the atmosphere.
No.
I guess the Cardiff winning away to Racing Metro wasn't really surprising at all.
I've seen Cardiff a few times this season, and I thought that I thought they would be lucky to get a losing bonus point. They haven't been very good, but having said that, they have got Gethin Jenkins and the World Cup players back, and they seem to have suddenly struck a vein of form. And long may it continue in that pool, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, well, it should be. It'll be fantastic if it goes right down to the wire. And I guess to all the people are texting in calling the London Irish fans plastic paddies or that, but hopefully...
I think that's unfair. I think it's really unfair. I mean, if you live in London and you want to go and watch a rugby match, you can go and watch whoever the hell you like, but it's a marketing exercise. They're no longer Irish. I think three Irish people at the club, Casey and Sanford, and I think there's one other. Is Brian Blaney still with them?
Yeah, he is.
So they have three Irish players. They're a professional rugby team. They use the Irish connection as a marketing exercise, and it's good for them.
Yeah, there's a lot of Irish flags as well at the grounds and that kind of thing. And William, just while I have you there, the Saracens in Pool 5, actually, Saracens bonus point win over Treviso, and Ospreys won at home to Biarritz. No surprises there.
Not really, no. Saracens are a good side. They're well coached by Mark McCall. And they're going to be tough no matter who comes up against them. I really think that they're one of the possible semi-finalist, I would think. I would almost pick, if I was a betting man, I'd pick money on them getting to the semis.
Yeah. What do you reckon about that one, Alan?
Yeah, I think the big game in the pool is obviously Saracens going to Biarritz, and Biarritz, who are struggling anyway, they're going to be without Dimitri Yashvili this weekend, and that's taking the heart out of the team, Biarritz. I think they're 7-5 to win that, and they really should win it. And I think if Saracens take that game, then it's between them and the Ospreys to decide the pool winner. I think Ospreys, they've obviously shed all the fake tan and all the Galacticos players, and I think it's done well for them. I don't think they're as talented or mercurial as they were before. I think they have a more solid look to them now, but I think that's better because they were so inconsistent. It was just beyond ridiculous, really. They were such a talented team. If you look at Phillips and Hook, Byrne, these, and I suppose Henson when he was there as well. Collins and Holla, great, great players on paper, but they never really produced. So they've gone back to basics. They're looking at the local players. They have a young fella, Matthew Morgan, as their second choice, number 10.
Yeah. And before we move on, just a final point. I want to put it to Ty to get his view on this one. The likes of McCall, O'Shea, and Bradley, they're all doing well in the UK, but they can't seem to get a job in Ireland. What do you reckon about that one?
Well, in certain cases, they're better off to go to England where there's more jobs and stuff. I mean, especially O'Shea completely turned the Harlequins around from the debacle of Bloodgate, and pretty much everyone who knows Irish rugby, knows what a tough time Bradley had down in Connacht. So if they can get the work in England, and if they're doing a good job, then, you know, fair play to them.
And yeah, but, and Tadhg, and for Bradley, like, it seems like he's gone from one difficult job to another. It's, you'd have to give him a bit of kudos for that.
Well, I mean, to say he had a difficult job in Connacht, I would say, in my opinion, it's more to do with the resources he had than his actual coaching ability, because he coached Ireland on an interim period there after Eddie O'Sullivan left, and he did a good job, but that was back when Connacht were getting the short end of the straw from the IRFU. So I don't think we should judge him purely on his achievements or lack thereof at Connacht, but he seems to be doing well at the moment. So
coming towards the end of our show, and I just want to talk about a lot of the Irish youngsters coming up, and a lot of people are talking about the Irish exiles, you know, players that have gone abroad and have played because they, you know, they haven't played, they've moved away from the provinces or that. Alan, firstly, looking at the young Irish players, I mean, firstly, with Connacht and Ulster, we have the likes of McSherry, Griffin, O'Halloran at Connacht. Ulster, we were talking a fair bit about Spence. You and William were saying there's a few years off him becoming an international player, and of course, Gilroy is there as well. What do you reckon about these young players? Is the future bright?
Well, I don't know. I think all those players you've mentioned, they might be a year or so off possibly an international call-up. To be honest, it's hard for me to comment on McSherry. I think the lads will probably know more.
Yeah.
Because maybe Tadhg might know more than me, because I've only seen him play once or twice. And in the games I've seen, yeah, he's very good. Griffin, I've seen him a couple of times. He's been very, very good. He seems a really strong kind of player, strong carrier. Not sure about his skill level. O'Halloran, yeah, he's obviously established himself in the team. Vinicolo was signed by Elwood, and he hasn't got in the team. I think he played a few weeks ago, had a horror, and he's been dropped since then. So I think it's important that these guys in Connacht keep, I suppose, they're kept in the team. And, you know, maybe the buy-ins that they brought in aren't given preferential treatment. On Ulster, I spoke about Gilroy. I just think he's an incredible player. On Munster, I suppose O'Mahony has really produced the goods, but Wallace being out, he's really kind of stepped up. I don't think he's a Wallace clone. I don't think he's that sort of player.
Lads, I want to bring this one to you. It's a bit of a bizarre one. It's hardly out of the news, but the Zach Guilford thing, do you think it's a bit... You don't see much of this in rugby. Well, you might see it with the English team at the World Cup, or stories you might have heard. But Alan, what do you reckon about this? Is this one of the most bizarre stories you've ever heard?
Well, he does have an alcohol problem. It came to light in the World Cup, and obviously his father actually passed away a few years ago in the stands when he was playing for the New Zealand under 20s. So that was quite a sad story. I suppose on his problems, I mean, yeah, I was reading it. It was an incredible, incredible story. I mean, God, walking naked, beat up into a pub. And then,
yeah,
when someone asked him, "Are you all right? Can I help you?" He punched him. It's a really awful story. I suppose on how to deal with it, I don't think it's really for me to comment. I think it really depends on the guy himself, whether you wrap your arms around him in a caring way and tell him, you know, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay, or you just give him a no-holds-barred warning to cop himself on, or you're out the door in terms of your rugby career.
Yeah. Tadhg, what do you think about this whole thing? I mean, Alan probably hit the nail on the head. It's kind of a fine line of on what way people should deal with it. And you know, it's a delicate issue on the whole thing. I mean, obviously it's a hard one to comment on.
Well, it's a delicate issue because, you know, as Alan said, his father did pass away in the stands. And I've no doubt in my mind that did contribute largely to his behaviour. Not just recently, but it's becoming a long history of behaviour with Zach Guilford now. You know, he's been on various touring teams where he's been left out of the squad, and he was left out of the squad for pretty much the entire World Cup because of an alcohol-related thing. And it is tragic what happened to his father, but in fairness to him, you know, he's a professional rugby player, and if you're having problems as a professional rugby player, then there are avenues to seek where you can get help and fix those problems and get your head back in what you're supposed to be doing. So, You know, I wouldn't blame it entirely on the situation regarding his father. I think he is a young player. He's making a lot of money for playing his sport, and it's easy to lose sight of things every now and then, especially when it comes to alcohol and stuff. Sure, you remember Dougie Howlett during the 2007 Rugby World Cup when he was jumping on cars and stuff. But you know, he has had high profile problems in the past, and given that he hasn't sorted them out then, so to be honest with you, I really don't see him at the highest level of the game if he continues this. And I mean, I was shocked when I heard about the stuff he got up to. He was on holiday in Cook Islands, but I mean, you can't blame that for that kind of behavior, especially when you're a professional and expected to behave appropriately.
It is, yeah, no, as I said, it's scary. I just want to wrap the show up, lads, with the Martin Johnson resigning from England. It's another story coming out of English rugby.
The RFU, William, is in a bit of a pickle at the moment.
Yeah, it's shambles, really.
Their executives seem to have jumped ship. It's unclear who's steering the ship. Do you reckon he really did have to go? Was there any way he was ever going to stay on at that?
I don't think so. I think the big mistake was appointing him in the first place when he had actually no coaching experience. You know, I just think he was the wrong guy at the wrong time. Perhaps in the future he might have been. And I also think that the RFU appear to be behaving like a bunch of clowns.
Yeah, yeah.
Really do. And the treatment of Mike Tindall, irrespective of what he did, I think that's an appalling way to treat the captain of your side.
Yeah, how about that, Alan? An appalling way to treat the captain of your side, and he had to go. The RFU are a bunch of clowns, as a lot of people seem to be saying, but we don't want to obviously label them that. But what do you think about the whole thing? It's a bit of a mess, really, again, isn't it?
Yeah, the RFU is an absolute travesty at the moment. All the executive blazers, they all have jumped ship. It's unclear, you know, who's running the thing now. On Jono, I suppose he really had to go, didn't he? I think they were planning an extensive review of the World Cup under Fran Cotton, who knows his stuff when it comes to English rugby, and I think Johnson was likely to be heavily criticised in that. So I think, yeah, it's right that he goes now rather than, you know, wait for a review that's going to be published. On his successor, I'm not sure there's going to be a big clamour for the job. I don't think it's a very attractive one. The English media is just vicious, and we've talked about it before. The RFU, as you said, it's not a stable organisation. There's a lot of English players with all the stories. A few of them obviously think they're rock stars, think they're great. When they're not, they think they're better than they actually are. So I don't think, I mean, they're talking about Graham Henry. There's not a hope in hell that Graham Henry is going to be the coach. Not a hope in hell.
Mallet, perhaps? You think Mallet might have a shot at the...
Mallet would be a good choice. He might go for it. I think Jim Mallinder of Northampton is the forerunner, and I think he'll get the job.
Because
he stated in the past that he would be very interested in the job if the RFU came calling to him.
Yeah.
I think he knows English rugby. He's done a great job at the Saints. Remember, Northampton were relegated a few years ago, and he got them out of the mire in the Championship.
Yeah.
Got them back up and running. I think they won the Amlin Challenge Cup the year they got back into the Premiership.
Yeah.
And now, obviously, they got to the Heineken Cup final last year. They've done well in the Premiership in general. And now, I suppose, he's done very, very well. And I think he's the first choice, and I think he will get the job. And then perhaps there's an avenue for our friend Eddie O'Sullivan to maybe become our anti-coach, but we'll see about that. But I think I'd be surprised if Mallinder isn't a candidate, at least.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And Tig, just to let the final point on the show to you, because you are abandoning us after this show. You're moving to another part of Kerry where you don't have internet access, but we'll talk about that when you're not around. Tig, what do you think about the whole the England thing? Do you think, as Alan was saying, Mallinder stems a good chance of getting the job?
Well, if England want to go places, I think Mallinder is their best option, to be honest. He's a fantastic coach. And he did fantastic things with Northampton. And the Martin Johnson thing, it's such a complicated situation. You know, I mean, a lot of the failure was down to him not reining in his players during the World Cup. And I guess that's kind of a hangover from, you know, the amateur slash professional era that he came into when, you know, lads would go drinking every weekend and on tours and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think it'll be between, in my opinion, it should be between Mallet and Melinda if England want to go places. Eddie O'Sullivan, not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a fair one. And lads, just to mention a quick one on the bet of the week. I'm reading this. Northampton, after getting mugged in Thomond Park, will be out for vengeance and will extract it in full on Scarlett's powder puff pack. Northampton by 12, 10 to 11, Paddy Power. What do you think about that one, Alan? Will you be putting a punt on as you always do?
I lost 22 quid on Ireland in the soccer this week. I am no longer betting. Thank you.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. What about yourself, William? Will you fancy one on that?
Yeah, if I was a betting man, I would put quite a lot of money on Northampton. I think they'll just demolish the Scarlets pack.
Yeah.
In the tight. I just think they'll have too much. Scarlets are a good side. They play lovely rugby. But they don't have the real grunt that you need to win those big games.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happened. And just a final one, Tig, we're going to miss you. I hope you're still going to tune in and try to get our podcasts when you can.
Well, I mean, where I'm going, Dave, you know, we conduct our internet via potatoes and through puddles of whiskey, so I can't guarantee anything. I'll do my best.
Well, I'll tell you.
Actually, can I just admit one little quip here? I was in a lovely little Scottish town last year called Malleg, on the west coast of Scotland, and I was walking around the town, and there was a pub, and I was going to go in for lunch, and then on the window they had in beautiful gold lettering the words coal fire. You know, they had a nice fire inside, and below that, in exactly the same lettering, they had Wi-Fi, and it looked as if they were advertising they had coal fire Wi-Fi. So maybe that's the same one that Tig's going to get in Tralee.
Yeah, possibly. Well, listen, we'll miss you, but you've been a sensation on the show, it has to be said, and thanks a million for joining us again.
I don't know about that, but thanks.
Jesus, don't hype him up too much there, Dave.
And thanks to you as well, Alan, your beautiful points as always.
Thanks, Dave.
And thanks to William making your debut. I hope, William, it's going to be the first of many. It's great to have an Ulster perspective on the show.
Well, I'm here and always willing. If you want me, I'll be there. So.
Oh, what a great lad William is. And thanks again to Pedro for listening, and also to Peter in Canada. Peter had to go because the time difference is just too much for him at the time. So that was a final episode with Tig on Talking Rugby. Myself and the lads will be back once again next week. Good evening. You're listening to The World's Talking with Dave O'Grady. Don't forget, if you have a story, an internet forum, a discussion you want to have, email theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to click like on Facebook, like on Twitter, like on everything, and we'll chat to you then.